Welcome to the Hill to Hill podcast. I'm here with Elijah Nishira, who's going to be talking about the growth of anti-Semitism here in the United States.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. So after yesterday's shooting of two police officers based on, they have claimed that it was anti-Semitism in New Jersey yesterday. It happened outside of a kosher deli. It is clear that anti-Semitism is still clearly visible, not only in the United States, not only in the state of New Jersey, but within the world. Throughout Europe, as the refugee crisis has began to really heat up within Europe, there have been a number of countries that have really beefed up the political propaganda. You see a lot of countries like Hungary, countries like some of the Baltic states have huge billboards that have pictures of George Soros blaming him. The right-wing parties are blaming him for a lot of the refugee issues within the country, and it is such clear anti-Semitism. George Soros is a prominent, wealthy Jewish leader, and so it really demonstrates him as the stereotype, and him as, look what the Jewish people are doing in Europe especially, and knowing the context of Europe is especially frightening because of what happened during the Holocaust. As these ads have become more prevalent, you've seen ads depicting Jewish people with George Soros and having him pictures of him with a lot of money. As they become more prevalent, it's given Europe the opportunity, a lot of people, Europeans, to look in the mirror and say, when they ask in class, you know, how could so many people have let something like the Holocaust happen? You see how the role that ordinary people have played in you know, either being numb to anti-Semitism or simply not doing anything about it.
From a statistics side, how has anti-Semitism affected the United States?
Recently the United States has seen a huge uptick in these anti-Semitic incidents, and it begs the question, really, what can the United States do to prevent these? The American Defamation League's most recent audit of anti-Semitic incidents in the United States recorded 1,879 acts in 2018, with a dramatic increase in physical assaults, including the deadliest attacks on Jews in U.S. history. That was the attack in Pittsburgh, where the gentleman shot up the synagogue where people had come to pray. And a wave of anti-Semitic robocalls targeted Jewish schools, JCCs, and synagogues, with a number of incidents occurring, sadly, at K-12 schools and on college campuses. For Jewish members of American society, there is a fear that of the incidents like what happened in Pittsburgh happen again, where something like an anti-Semitic gunman just goes and shoots up a synagogue. So it's something that we have to be really conscious of, especially in such a such a divisive time, and such a time where people somehow feel it's okay to do a lot of these racist and anti-Semitic
acts. President Trump recently accused Jewish people who supported Democrats as betraying their own. Is this accurate, and does this contribute to the anti-Semitic acts, in your opinion?
I don't think it necessarily contributes to the anti-Semitic acts, but it kind of shows, it plays on some of the stereotypes that have contributed in Europe to a lot of the anti-Semitic acts. I don't know if that specifically causes it, but I think what it does is it kind of looks at Jewish people and say, you have to fit into this certain box. You have to support Trump feels like you have to support him to be supportive of Israel. And it kind of demonstrates some of these stereotypes Trump said a couple of days ago to a bunch of Jewish donors, that they have to support him because then their businesses will fail. And certainly trying to connect the two, which is, again, another stereotype that I think that, though I don't think Trump is necessarily causing these anti-Semitic things to happen, I think you playing to these stereotypes is how some of these right-wing parties in Europe do, to compare George Soros and some of those things to gain political support. So I'm not saying he's definitely there, but it's definitely something that's going to happen. And so as these events have continued to happen, I sat down with Bailey Steinhauer, who works in the education wing of the Holocaust Museum, and she spoke to me about her view on how these incidents have continued to happen and the historical significance of the work she's doing in 2019.
Okay. Hi, Bailey. I'm here with Bailey Steinhauer, who works at the Holocaust Museum. Bailey, could you just kind of tell me what got you interested in working at the museum?
Yeah, for sure. So I am a major in Justice and Peace Studies, and my concentration is human rights. So I've always been interested in human rights and, you know, the violations that have been committed. But I'm also Jewish, so there's a little bit of personal stake with the Holocaust particularly.
Can you kind of go over a little bit what why being as a Jewish person it's important it, you feel it's important for people to understand kind of the history of the Holocaust and what kind of motivated you to work there as a Jewish person?
Yeah, I think one of the messages that we really try to get across at the Holocaust Museum is that this was not the work of one person, and that this was the work of lots of people who were, you know, caught up in this idea. And so knowing that it happened by people, but also that this could happen to anybody and any group of people anywhere, and just really kind of sitting in the fact that, like, this was a phenomenon more than it was one monster perpetrating it, and, like, sharing that message and making sure people understand the role of not only, like, Hitler and the people high up in the Nazi, like, organization, but also the role of everyday people.
Can you kind of speak, right now we're seeing in the United States, really big in Europe especially right now, is this rise of nationalism. You see some of the propaganda going on in countries like Hungary, in other countries throughout Europe about being very anti-refugee, being very anti-Muslim. What are the parallels between that and what you study, and what has changed within the world that has made something like this nationalistic rise suddenly possible again?
Well, I definitely see a lot of parallels between what we saw leading up to the Holocaust and what goes on now, particularly with refugees. You know, you look at the Evian Conference, which was when Germany was like, hey, who wants to take on our Jewish refugees, to basically a whole entire world. And when the whole entire world turns their back on this group of people who Germany's asking for people to take away from them, you know, where does that lead us when they're stuck in a country that doesn't want them and no one's willing to take them on? This is when the conditions are right for things like the Holocaust to happen. So I think that's definitely, like, a direct parallel that is kind of alarming, seeing that people won't take on these refugees. I'm not really sure about what conditions have led us into a world that, you know, makes this all possible, but I think that makes it all the more important to learn about this stuff, because if it is possible to happen again, you know, people leave all of these genocide memorials being like, never again, never again. But, like, it is happening again, and being aware of that, and not only knowing, like, the tragedy that happened, but what allowed it to happen, and being able to identify that happening around you and what your role in it is going to be.
There's also been a rise of anti-Semitic acts. Yesterday we saw in New Jersey, in Jersey City, there was an anti-Semitic shooting within of a couple police officers. As someone who works at the Holocaust Museum, but also in the context of a Jewish person, how do you think that these incidents can be prevented, and why do you think there is continues to be such anti-Semitism, particularly within the United States right now?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the United States is not a country that's, you know, new to the business of hating other people and groups having conflicts like that. So when you think about, like, something like anti-Semitism that wasn't by any means invented by the Nazis or by Germany, you know, that was something that's been around for a long time, it's not surprising to see that in a country where hate has really been festering lately, that people would grab onto any of these ideologies that are meant to, you know, other someone else or raise up your own individual identity at the cost of someone else's identity.
Right.
I don't know, like, preventing it, I think, is a really complicated question, because how do you prevent any kind of, you know, racially motivated atrocity like that? How do you address that in a country where we're not totally owning up to everything that we've done, like, individually and as a nation? Like, there's not a lot of mention of the fact that the ground that our nation is founded on is taken by genocide from an entire group of people. So when there's not dialogues going on about it, there's not recognition at the national level of where our history comes from. I think it's kind of hard to ask individuals to address it themselves.
I want to move on to what your role is at the Holocaust Museum. Can you just kind of go over what your day looks like there and kind of basically your duties, kind of tell the audience kind of exactly what it's like to work there?
Yeah, so I help out in the education part. Specifically, I work with training new docents, so the people who are going to educate, especially students who come to the museum, and we have a big law enforcement program, so police officers, judges, even FBI agents come through the museum, and so I'm training the people who will give them their tours. So a lot of what we do is help out with classes and make sure that they're updated on, good tour guide techniques, literally what is in the permanent exhibit that they need to be sharing with people. So it's about 4 hours of in-class time with the docents, getting tours of the permanent exhibit, going over the history with the historians, and then outside of that, just making sure that they have all the resources that they need to be good guides, answering their emails, making sure they get their assignments in on time, dealing with all like the logistical stuff that goes along with training these people to help disseminate the message of the Holocaust Museum.
Has there been any real big challenges of working at the museum that you've found in particular?
I haven't personally faced any big challenges. I mean, the material can be hard, and so that can be difficult. But I think like a challenge that the museum faces as an institution is, as time goes on, the first person narrative of I was in the Holocaust, here's what I've experienced, is starting to die out, literally. So how much more important is it that these institutions exist where we're making sure people know this history when the people who are there to testify to what happened are going away? So it's all the more important to have places like these that are making sure people know, like, this actually did happen. Here's ev the reasons why it happened. Here's how we got to that point. And that it did, again, that it really did happen, because as people who witnessed it are dying, there is kind of a little bit more of a room for people to dispute that.
I'm Bailey. That's Bailey Steinhauer, and I want to thank you, Bailey, for being on
Thank you, Elijah.
the Hill to Hill podcast, connecting Cornell to the Capitol Hill. So thank you so much, Bailey.
Thanks, and that was a really great interview from Bailey. And I just think it really shows how the historical context has so much to do with what's happening within Europe, what's happening with the United States in terms of fighting anti-Semitism. So, yeah, this has been the Hill to Hill podcast. I'm Elijah Nishura.
I'm Sean Ikosaka.
And
Thank you
see
for
you
listening. Yeah,
later.
tune in next time.